This is Main Street Weekend on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg, and still to come on this Sunday edition, we are going to learn about some fun programs coming up with fine arts across the state. But we are going to start today talking about trauma. We are going to talk today with Dan Hudson. He is the coordinator for the Warriors of the North Project, as we learn about different ways that art can help veterans and other first responders cope with trauma. Dan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
What is the Warriors of the North Project?
The Warriors in the North is an advisory type group, and it was developed by the Fargo Veterans Administration Hospital, specifically Dr. Margot Norton, because of the research and the positive things that come out of soldiers and even first responders healing through the arts, whether that be painting, music, writing, mm-hmm. poetry, and things like that. So they developed a advisory group and assigned tasks to each individual, and we just kind of went from there.
What drew you to this project?
I was approached by Dr. Norton to be part of this project, and we actually had an event last year prior to COVID, and a lot of the community leaders in the community was invited, and some of the artwork and the mask making mm-hmm. projects were all displayed. There were readings, there was poetry. It was a terrific event.
And your role, you are a musician, right?
I am a musician. I'm always aspiring, but I've always loved music, and it's really been my outlet through my journey.
Well, let's talk about that.
Sure.
What is your war story?
I think to begin, trauma can affect just about anyone at mm-hmm. any stage of their
yes.
life. And I usually reserve, like we say, war stories for intimate settings. But at one point, I decided it needed to get out there because there were so many other individuals that were trying to heal.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a police officer in Fargo for several years prior to 9/11 and being activated. Mm-hmm. And some of the situations that myself and my colleagues would get into, you wouldn't really think much about right away. But it did start to build up.
Mm-hmm.
And about two blocks north of here, I nearly had a train take my life. And trying to push a suicidal male off the tracks who's trying to take his
wow.
life. And at the time, you really don't think much about it. But later on, when other type of situations compound, behaviors change, perceptions change, throw COVID into mm-hmm. a situation,
yeah.
a war into a situation and being deployed, it seemed like a perfect marriage for me to be part of this.
When did you start to be able to recognize that word trauma as something that you had been surviving?
It took about 15 years,
wow.
to be honest with you. And it came to a head one day when we were with some friends at a marathon. I wasn't running it. I'm not a runner. But we were there supporting her, running her marathon. And I was having a bad day.
Mm.
And from Hudson, Wisconsin, all the way to Detroit Lakes, Minnesota, where we live, I just spilled my guts to my wife, and I said, this is what's bugging me. And I was uneducated about it. I had really never been educated about trauma and what it can do to you.
Mm-hmm.
And it took those steps and her bravery and understanding and patience and forgiveness to go talk to somebody about it.
Who were you able to turn to?
I was able to turn to the Veterans Administration, and that's really where the story really began. And when I went in for the initial consultation or evaluation, I probably said two words, and I sat and listened to my wife describe what was going on. And it was embarrassing, humbling, sad, but also a huge relief.
Yeah.
Because I started to learn at that point.
Well, it almost sounds like not exactly an out-of-body experience, but to hear someone else describe your mental state and also your behaviors, I mean, you use the word embarrassing and humbling, but I wonder if clarifying could also be added in there. Like maybe you didn't even realize how much this was impacting.
I didn't. I knew that for most of that 15 years, I was not very trusting. Mm. I had given up every single hobby I ever had, and I just worked. I was focused and I worked. And it's what I was good at, and that's all that mattered. And the embarrassing part about it for me was we talked about being a warrior. Well, warriors protect. And here's the family I'm supposed to be protecting, and I was doing really just the opposite and didn't know it.
Well, let's talk about this idea of distracting versus addressing. If you just work and work and work, you can kind of get by. You're distracting your mind from thinking about the traumas that you've survived. But a person could make an argument, well, isn't art just distracting your mind? What is happening that is different, distracting your mind through work versus addressing these problems in therapy, in art?
I think the main thing about it is allowing yourself to use both sides of your brain and your creative prowess. Falling back in love with something that maybe you let go.
Yeah.
And work can be regimented. Mm-hmm. There's rules. It flows typically the same way. There's good days and bad days, but it's structured. Art doesn't have to be structured. Art can be anything. And that allows, for me, and I can only really speak for myself and those who I know, it allows you to express yourself and allows you to deal with those emotions that maybe have been haunting you or have been just suppressed for years.
Mm-hmm.
And that can come in any form. What I found was writing was a huge outlet for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that turned into me picking up one of the guitars that had dust on it hanging on my wall and taking my drum set out and doing that again and then trying to write music. And recently, I didn't realize I could do this. I started painting. So it's been really eye-opening for me.
Yeah. Well, and now you are using your skills as a writer and a musician to help other trauma survivors. We're visiting today with Dan Hudson, coordinator for the Warriors in the North Project, about ways that veterans and other trauma survivors can use art as a way to heal from the traumas that they have survived. You had one person who submitted a poem that turned into a song?
I did. Good friend of mine. We had decided, okay, let's do this music program, and she's on the advisory board with me. And I said, well, we could take some poetry because a lot of great songs come from great poems.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll try and turn it into a song. And it's just a crazy story because before I even got the words out of my mouth, I had a text message from her with this poem. And I read it just briefly. I'm like, well, it's pretty good. And I got home and I read it five more times. And it was like a punch in my stomach when I read these words. I'm like, this is from the heart and very good. So I just put it out on Facebook. I'm like, look, I'm looking for a musician. I can drum. I can play guitar. I can sing a little bit. But I cannot write a melody to save my life. So I enlist the help of the community because we have so much talent here.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of ours on Facebook knew an artist. And she goes, I absolutely want to be part of this project. And she just grabbed it and ran with it. And what she told me was, her name's Alyssa Ruffin, and she's a phenomenal woman. She's a Mission 22 ambassador. Her husband's a captain in Space Force. She told me that she was expecting war stories when she agreed to do this. And this poem was a poem about sexual assault.
Yeah.
And she struggled with it because for the longest time she suppressed her own past and came out as a victim and a survivor of sexual assault. And it was difficult for her to get through this. And now she's on so many different radio stations talking about it as a leader, as a mentor. The song got produced and recently was nominated for Single of the Year in the Josie Awards for independent music. And it's just been a wild journey.
Well, let's listen to a clip of the song Collateral Damage. This is performed by Alyssa Ruffin, but based on a poem submitted by a friend of Dan's.
To hurt any of you, it's just what survivors do. I'm doing better now, my mind is clear. Will I learn to love myself? That's still my biggest fear. My body still aches from the trauma inside. You could say I knew him well.
Was a clip from the song Collateral Damage. And Dan, I want to talk right away about the clip that I picked there. She starts immediately by apologizing. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to hurt any of you. And you also talked about in your own trauma story the guilt that you felt about not being able to be a whole person when you're trying to heal, when this person is trying to heal. How bad did that guilt get?
I think it was bad. Because when you live a life of anger, or I don't want to use the word paranoia, it's not. It's more hypervigilance. Always concerned for the safety of everyone. But that hypervigilance in itself, now that you can see it in hindsight,
is a stress state.
It was stressful for me, but it was also stressful for the family because it would be the smallest things. If my son was using the lawnmower, you play the what-if game. It's like, oh, what if a rock hits him in the head? Or what if he falls? And what are we going to do? And you're trying to plan. I mean, going to the grocery store required a huge operational plan. I mean, I look back now and it's – I don't want people that are going through this and don't know yet to be embarrassed about it, but know that it's real and can be controlled, and to learn about it and take control of it is important because it will stress you. It will keep you from sleeping, and without sleep, things are even magnified, and kids especially will pick up on it. And the journey that I walked with my family was bumpy, but now I can see a lot of this stuff. It's like this light came on. And to be able to be a mentor at the VA to some veterans that are healing now and be asked to do that is an honor for me. But I can't really describe it. I could stand there and watch people walk in that door of the VA or even in a public setting, and I can almost pick them out. It's like that person. It's like this light has dimmed behind their eyes. And you want that light to come back, that sparkle, that passion for your hobbies. And I firmly believe that the arts are a huge part of that, whether that be the music or the writing.
Right. And there have been other events. There is a mask-making event, and there's a, like you mentioned, the writer's workshop, and then you're working on the music. Some people are also doing photo shoots. How can people get involved, someone who needs their trauma story told?
They can contact me. They can contact anyone. If they're a veteran or first responder, we wanted to expand this program, especially the arts program. So Angie, my wife, and I started a nonprofit to make it even more broad. So it's not just limited to everyone, to include emergency room nurses, firefighters, paramedics, first responders. And there are tons of organizations out there, and they're all terrific for the most part. But they're also overwhelmed because this is the stigma of this is going away, and people are addressing it. And I think that's important, especially in these bravado professions where you have to put yourself in a situation and deal with it. So we wanted to include the families as well. And that's something that we learned as a family, knowing that I have a very forgiving son and a very loving wife. Mm. I kind of smile now because they see it and I see it and they see how far we've come all together. Mm-hmm. So it did take a village. But starting this nonprofit, they can contact me. As far as if you're a veteran and want to participate, I have contact numbers. I can put you in contact with the people for writing workshops. We have a local writing celebrity that is going to be conducting a Zoom writing workshop as well as an in-person one if everything works out, hopefully. And I know Amy Tichy is the point of contact for that, and mm-hmm. I'd be happy to provide numbers and everything.
And so to reach out to you, you have a Facebook page, right?
I do. I have a Facebook page. It's called Operation Check Six.
Okay.
And you can just search that, and you can contact me right through there. There's email, there's phone, whatever works.
Why is it called Operation Check Six?
So before we left on my deployment overseas after 9/11, the commander of the base at the time was a pilot, and that was the last thing he told us was check six. He kept saying it over and over.
Watch your back.
Watch your back. And watch your partner's back.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we all need to do that. And I really want people to know that you don't have to be a first responder or a military soldier to experience this type of trauma. I oftentimes hear about it from even our farmers who go through tough times, some of the things they do. So I think it can happen to anyone. And everybody's trauma is a little bit different. Individuals who have survived trauma or are healing from trauma have this nexus where they're just kind of drawn to each other. And it's a pretty amazing thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the music portion of this through our nonprofit and through Warriors in the North, I've been contacted by some of the most amazing people, mainly veterans. One's a record producer, and he moved here locally and does amazing things. Absolutely outstanding individual. Gina Powers' band has agreed to help out. She's a phenomenal artist. I mean,
mm-hmm.
the voice of an angel. The whole band is great. And the veteran with the music production stuff, it's called Sound HQ, and he's a vet. And he is just outstanding what he can do. He can put things together and clip things together, and I think he could make me sound great. I'm pretty sure he could. He says he can. But this group of people that have come forward and willing to help, Gina, Joe at Sound HQ, Alyssa, Linz for writing her poem, it's just been this crazy journey.
Yeah.
And it's been so rewarding for me. So this whole thing has helped me too. And I try and explain that to all of them. I'm like, you guys are helping me by doing this. And they don't understand. They keep thanking me. And I'm like, don't thank me. I'm thanking you.
You know, it's funny. I can see that light getting a little brighter in your eyes just as you're talking about the people in your trauma survivor nexus.
It's this group of people have a relationship where we may not even have ever met in person.
Mm.
You know, Alyssa and I have never met in person, but we talk almost daily. And to the point where she asked me to drum for her in North Dakota at a music event, so I'll be doing that. I mean, that's an opportunity for me that I can't thank her enough for. And it's going to be absolutely outstanding.
Do you think that you will have any pandemic-specific focus for trauma recovery?
You know, that's to be determined. I think the pandemic didn't help matters. A lot of the groups at the VA are in person and they're important, and it encompasses different conflicts. We have Vietnam veterans, we have Desert Storm veterans, Iraqi freedom, Afghanistan, and that in-person human interaction to me is more effective. I mean, we do what we had to do. This music project, we were fortunate. A lot of the in-person things people couldn't do. But with technology now and music software, we were able to do everything electronically and send files back and forth. And so we didn't stop.
And now that song is up for Song of the Year, a Josie Award for Independent Music. How does that feel to get this to this point?
It hasn't quite sunk in yet. And I'm honestly so proud of Lynn's and Alyssa. And what happened was, being this was a song about sexual assault, I'm just a small link in this long, powerful chain of powerful and amazing women. The song was written by a woman. It was sung by a woman, produced by a girl, which is the name of the company, produced by a girl, Audio Audrey, in Wisconsin.
I was like, is she 12?
No, no, you had to clarify that. But all-female band, and it's really, I guess the way it's described is a power anthem for survivors of sexual assault. And that was really the goal. And how do I feel? I'm proud of them. I'm in awe of their courage. I learned a lot about being a survivor from them. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot about sexual assault from them.
Let's talk about that word survivor, because a person could just as easily be called a victim. Why do you choose to continue to use the word survivor instead of victim?
We're currently writing a song called Riptide, and a riptide can pull you out to sea, or it can pull you underwater if you do nothing. The individuals that are survivors have identified what was going on with them, and they've taken the brave steps to not necessarily correct but to heal. Therefore, they've survived. The worst case scenario is it consumes them. The demons inside them would consume them, and they wouldn't want to be on this earth any longer. And that's the worst case scenario. These survivors, men or women, whomever you are, wherever you're at, have come forward. They've taken a stand, and they've taken a portion of their life back that was taken from them. To me, that's a survivor. And to take it a step further, now they're trying to help others do that. Mm-hmm. Now they're a leader. And that's what I've surrounded myself with, not even by choice, but that's who these people are.
One last question. You worked in law enforcement. You still work in law enforcement. And there has been this call lately for defund the police, which, to put more nuance to it, is let's take some of the money from funding the police and try more community policing, more preventative measures, less just the reactive portion of policing. And I'm wondering if, both as a law enforcement officer and as someone who sees the value in arts and in community, what is your take on this movement?
My take on the movement is we're at this strange crossroads, and it happens every now and then. There were some unfortunate events that spurred the crossroads or kind of pushed it to the forefront. But when I started, community-oriented policing was just in the media and being pushed, and I thought it was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And as I matured as a law enforcement officer and learned to listen instead of talk all the time, I learned that the community-oriented policing model for me, just me, was the most effective. I knew just about everyone on my beat, and they would call me. It was like I had a team behind me. And instead of defunding, how about having a coalition or cooperation, kind of like we've done here? We're really fortunate here. We are. I worked with the best men and women at the police department. I really did. And we were like a family. And I believe that a community like this could be a role model for that type of situation. But I don't know if defunding is the answer. Training is always a great option, but also a partnership between the community and the police force or any emergency services that may enforce law or protect freedom. It's a balancing act, and there is no easy answer.
Dan Hudson is the coordinator for the Warriors in the North Project, and they are looking for people to participate. Any trauma survivors out there can find out about Operation Check Six on Facebook and reach out to Dan to get involved. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me and for what you all do for our community.
Early automobile trails in America included the 1914 Red Trail, that extended from Seattle to New York City. The Red Trail became Highway 10 in 1927. And today, you can still drive a section of that original route in the Old Red Old 10 Scenic Byway between Mandan and Dickinson. You can enjoy a pastoral country drive and the small-town amenities in New Salem, Almont, Glen Ullin, Hebron, and Richardton. More information about the Old Red Trail can be found online at oldredold10.com or on their Facebook page.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg, and joining me now are the co-directors of the Capitol Gallery in Bismarck, David Borlaug and Marcy Narum. David, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi, we're just glad to be here.
Marcy, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. This is wonderful.
There are a lot of cool things happening between the two different galleries, one in Bismarck and one in Medora, and then some expansion work in Fargo. Lots to talk about regarding the Capitol Gallery. 2020 was just a weird year in general, personally, professionally. With that in mind, Marcy, what are you most looking forward to for the 2021 season?
Oh, my goodness. Well, 2020 was such a surprise. I didn't expect to be in this position to begin with. I started part-time and then became full-time a very short time later. And what I'm looking forward to most is the exciting things that we just continue to dream up and the vision for the Capitol Gallery and all the ways that we can connect with more people through the mission that we have and becoming North Dakota's full-service fine art gallery.
What do you mean when you say full service?
Well, we do more than just sell art and, you know, raise money. We take the art to the art buyer. Somebody comes in and sees, I'm trying to think of a size painting of Walter Peale, a large painting, or they see two of them and they're not sure which one they like, or maybe they see three. And so David and I will take those paintings to the buyer's home and even let them live with those paintings for as long as they need to, relatively speaking. So, we're not talking 6 months.
Years.
Yeah, there's a statute of limitations where we can't collect money anymore.
Right. So a couple of weeks and then go back to their home and hang it for them. We'll do the installation. We'll help them with the design and, does it look right in this room? Does it look right hanging here? And, so it has been a lot of fun. And from that has come a new campaign that we call Hang With Us.
I love this idea in part because just getting a nail on the stud and is hard enough, much less how to actually frame this photo and do I like it? I don't know. And also, so we've had David on the show a number of times. And then I think it was last summer, I randomly hop into a bar in Medora with a couple of friends and they're with this friend. And all of a sudden I'm like, wait a second, you're David, aren't you? And David has a very larger than life persona. And I want to hear how this Hang With Us program really works, because I imagine going to the gallery, picking out some paintings, and I just want to go home, kick off my shoes, pour a drink, and just watch David do this work for me. Can it be that good?
Well, you pretty much described the program because there is wine involved on a regular basis. But, what Marcy said, it's what we do. And we sort of just fell into it when we were asked if we would do that. And immediately, yeah, sure. Why wouldn't we?
Yeah.
And the client was taken aback. Really? Really? I mean, you're serious? It was a distance. There was a U-Haul involved.
Okay.
But we came in that very first visit with, 15 or more pieces. And literally, we just walk around the home. And if you can imagine, me standing up holding a piece and Marcy with the client, looking at it, thinking to the left, to the right, up, down, does it match the couch, whatever. But It really, really works.
Wow.
And obviously people just love the attention. They love the fact that we care enough to do that.
Yeah.
But it is really, I think, something that is a misnomer in the world of art galleries is that people think we hang beautiful art and then we open the doors and sit back and wait for people to show up. And
right.
It just doesn't work that way. You have to be more proactive. Yes, people do come in. We have receptions and people enjoy that. But really, as wonderful as art looks hanging in our gallery, you still have to imagine it in your home.
Yeah.
And that's what's truly important. So it just works really well.
Well, Marcy, David just said there, you know, little left, little right, does it match the couch? But also you have to be kind of reading the people. Like, mm-hmm. do the people and the art match each other? What's your process for reading people?
Well, you know, like David mentioned, it transforms. And I want to just kind of piggyback on that it's kind of like when you see a piece of clothes on a hanger and there's that appeal. So just kind of take that as an example. You see something and if you're shopping with a friend, their eyes light up and they get excited. And it's like, oh, I love that. But then if they see that in the gallery and we take it to their house and their eyes light up again, oh, it's just what I imagined. Or it fits the way I hoped it would. Or, you know, and so in that same way, it is listening to them and really asking them, what is the tone? What is the mood that you are hoping to have in this space?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe if it's not right, well, have you tried it over? Should we try it over here? Mm-hmm. And that has happened.
Should we have more wine?
There's that. But that on those trips, we make sure we get a check or swipe a credit card on the spot.
And don't drive the U-Haul home that night.
Right.
Well, there's that. But you know, that we have Hang With Us, which we love, and we love working with Fargo creative genius Spider Junk, who designed our logo, and he helped us with that whole campaign development. But, you know, what Marcy just said, that's a wonderful analogy between trying on clothes and trying on art. And I think now it's, you need to take it off the hanger and try it on. And literally, that's what we're doing.
And
we're taking it off the hanger in the gallery, bringing it to your home, and try it on there.
And will you do this across the state?
We will go to all points within North America at this point in time.
What would make it even easier, though, for us is to have, you know, our own delivery vehicle. And that's on our wish list. And it's not just – we'll have it eventually.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of
time. Is there a fundraising campaign for that?
Well, it's going to have a mention. In fact, okay, here's a little plug. We have a periodical that Marcy and I put out. By the way, we like to point out that between the two of us, we have 74 years of media experience. We both started young, but one of us is a little older than the other. But it's really been a great joy working with Marcy to bring that all out and to draw upon both of our backgrounds there. But we call it the Society Forum. We're the Capital Gallery Society. We are a nonprofit. That kind of gets lost on people. You know, Ashley, you can appreciate in our previous lives too, you know, with Clay Jenkinson publishing books and producing documentary films for Prairie Public, that type of thing. You don't always look like a nonprofit, and you certainly don't always look very needy. And when you have a gorgeous art galleries in Bismarck, in Medora, and a presence in downtown Fargo, we do need to remind people we are a nonprofit. We rely on the goodwill of people. Art sales alone don't do it. But we have a higher mission. It's celebrating history, art, and culture. We do things with school children. We do things with outreach. But it pivots around fine art, obviously. So we dwell on, we focus on that Hang With Us because that's how we get to where we want to be.
Yeah.
But all of that pivots around being a nonprofit. So, yes, we put in the Society Forum. A wish list of things. We're looking for a Steinway & Sons baby grand piano, and we're looking for one of those upright van type things that we can just put a gargantuan Walter Peel in the back and hit the road.
I've got a crappy piano. That's not helping.
That's what we're afraid of. That's why we specifically say Steinway & Sons, because we can imagine, you know, 4th Street in Bismarck, the sidewalk lined with upright pianos.
Did you see any pandemic-induced change in the support level for the Capitol Gallery?
I'll take a stab, because Marcy started part-time in July, mm-hmm. when we were coming out of the fog, and then full-time September 1st, and here we are. It was an interesting time. We literally closed down for 3 months.
Yeah.
In fact, we had just returned. Britta Anderson, one of our artists, and I had returned. Well, actually, we returned from a client visit, but hanging art in our Fargo Presence, which is curated by Trevor Hill Design on Roberts Alley, just off Broadway in downtown Fargo. We hung those pieces like whatever, the 13th or 14th, whatever Saturday, Sunday was of March. And then I think on the way home, heard the news that, okay, the world's going to come to a change here, and came back to Bismarck and promptly closed up shop that Monday and remained closed through May. And we weathered it well. As a nonprofit, I suppose we should, be in sackcloth and ashes and lament our tale of woe. But we didn't. We did okay. It wasn't great, but we did okay. We didn't sell any art for 3 months, but we have a wonderful landlord who gave us a 3-month forgiveness on rent, which is a big deal in a large space in downtown Bismarck. And we did send out, we waited a little while, but we sent out a plea to our members, our donors, if you will, our patrons, now we call them, and it was well received. People responded generously to help us out. But it's been a slow, return. We took our time. We took it easy, like an opening receptions for a while. And then when we did have them, more like in the fall, we just sort of purposely kept them a little bit more confined. We've had up to 200 people in that gallery, and we did not want that. But, 35 to 50 people is just fine, we discovered. So it's been a learning process. And then we did see this past autumn, it was like a resurgence. Mm-hmm. It wasn't not so much in people coming in, but the art going out. And again, it goes back to that hang with us, Marcy and I making those visits. But
and people spending a lot of time at home.
They were.
I need some art here.
Well, it's the remodeling industry. Everything has benefited in that way. But for us, then fast forward 1 year later, but this past March, we had the single biggest sales month ever in now nearly 5 years since we opened. That occurred in March. So we feel really, really good about going forward.
We're visiting today with David Borlaug and Marcy Narum, co-directors of the Capitol Gallery. The Capitol Gallery has galleries in Bismarck and Medora and a presence in Fargo. Marcy, what is the Inspired Living Project?
Well, we just announced or invited some inspired board of advisors to the gallery last week to get some input on this. I have been the owner of Inspired Woman as a trade name and a magazine and an online presence. I've been involved since 2015 and became an owner of that in 2016. And last year, pandemic. That's all you have to say, right? Just 2020. And so things changed, and thus I became involved with the Capitol Gallery, which had been a consistent advertiser with Inspired Woman. Thank you again, David. And also we had talked about having a talk show and doing a segment. And the gallery was going to be kind of the studio space for these talk show segments. Well, then David mentioned earlier our combined years of experience in journalism. And we were just talking one day and kind of what-ifing. And what if it could be a Capitol Gallery project? And so we talked about that. I said, what about Inspired Life? And David said, what about Inspired Living? And there we are.
And this is how this works in this co-directorship. Within the moment I said inspired living, her eyes lit up. She opened up her laptop, and 7 minutes later, she'd registered it as a trade name with the Secretary of State's office. So that's how things get done.
You're hired, Marcy. You should keep her, David.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I liked, yeah. And it's just been a great partnership in that way that we're both kind of big thinkers, but mm-hmm. big doers, too. And yeah. So I guess the answer is it is a – right now, an online – it will become an online presence and inspired living through art and family, home, design, animals. It's a long list of things. So it's something that hasn't been rolled out yet officially, but will be in the near future. And we have some just exciting plans for it.
And what's on your wish list for that to be able to roll out?
We'll be working on, because we're a nonprofit and we both have experience publishing magazines, but we're not going to sell advertising. It's not going to be about that. It's non-commercial, but we'll seek sponsorships. And it's not hard to imagine that entities out there, whether they're in healthcare or real estate or art world or anything, could want to, you know, bring to the public something called inspired living. And we're running down the list, but you know, inspired art, beyond living, art, health, family, travel, but they all work around the concept of our mission statement, which is celebrating history, art, and culture. And that's the uniqueness. That's what we can do as a nonprofit. That's what makes us different than a commercial enterprise trying to accomplish the same thing. Mm. We always have a higher purpose, a higher calling, if you will. This is a means to an end. This is a way through a website, but then ultimately some of us just can't. We still have ink under our fingernails, and we can imagine a beautiful presentation-type magazine format that could come out maybe a couple times a year that has columns and features. But again, art, art, art at its core, but as we all know, art manifests itself in many wonderful ways.
There is a way to encourage young people to manifest some art, part of the Bisman Art Fair student project. This is up now, and the student art fair closes at the end of the month, open to art students 16 to 18 from the Bismarck-Mandan area. How many submissions did you get, Marcy?
Well, we are pleased to be able to showcase 12 in our student art fair, our first ever, and it is an incredible representation of art, including photography and watercolor, oil,
charcoal,
some pen, and coffee.
Oh, that's right.
What? Yeah. Yes.
And even though it's not, it's really a creme de la creme kind of a thing. It's the best of the best is what we're showing. But mm-hmm. I think every public school and parochial school and homeschool are all mm-hmm. represented in those dozen pieces. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So it's going to be a really dramatic, beautiful display.
Yeah. Go back to this coffee one.
Well, yeah, and it's really beautiful. It's a tiger lily, pink tiger lily piece, and she used watercolor and something else, and then coffee to paint the leaves.
We have another artist that did that. Is there a more technical name? Bob Matz.
Bob Matz, yeah.
And he does it's a fancier name than wood burning. But
pyrography.
Yes, pyrography. Oh, wow. But it's burned into – it doesn't have to be wood. But then he would take coffee or watercolor, other media, and work with that burning effect.
Mm.
But coffee, it's an amazing effect that it has on a piece.
Wow.
But you wouldn't guess that on this because it's a beautiful floral, very vibrant. And his pieces, you know, were darker on a wood grain. But that's the kind of thing that – you know, students are learning,
yeah.
And what could be better for a young student than to have their piece showcased in the Capitol Gallery and also for sale. We're letting kids sell their art.
Yeah.
And then they get their portion. They're learning, you know, this is how life works. You know, people take a commission. But our commission is going into another exciting development that Marcy can talk about, the Student Art Fund that we just launched.
Well, and it came out of one of the art teachers' concern over, well, what if some of the students aren't able to afford making the art hangable, you know, putting it in a frame, putting the wire on the back or the hooks or whatever it might be. And so we just talked about, well, how do we make that possible for the students? And a student art fund is what we came up with. And pretty soon we had a couple of potential sponsors saying, we like that idea. How can we help? And so thanks to Thrivent Financial and also CREA, which is the Central Regional Educational Association, we have now about $5,000 that we can help support students in that way, but also by offering some scholarships. And right now that looks like anything from an art camp to an online course to, you know, eventually it could be a scholarship to a second-year college student pursuing an art degree and, you know, something like that. And we feel really good about that, that it's something more than just a ribbon or, you know, that we can give them something that really celebrates them as an artist. And our partner in this art fair, Carden Custom Framing, I just have to acknowledge Dave and Alicia Langang. They have been just fantastic partners. They are putting together gift items and gift cards so that all of the students that are participating will be able to continue their art with some professional tools and paints from their store.
Well, you can support a student artist, an inspiring artist, and even get David and Marcy to come to your house and hang that piece. David Borlaug and Marcy Narum are co-directors of the Capitol Gallery, with galleries in Bismarck and Medora and a presence in Fargo. And you can find out more at thecapitalgallery.com. David, thank you for your time today.
Thank you. It was great.
Marcy, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks a lot.
When you hear arts programming here on Prairie Public, know that it is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, and we thank them.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg. In spring, we hear more bird song. And lately, we've been enjoying more song from Tom Ezern, as he's been tracing the history of folk song and ballads in his Plains Folk essays. This one is called Marching to Bismarck.
Hurrah, hurrah, the farmer shall be free. Hurrah, hurrah, their freedom now they see. Because the time has come when farmers all agree, and now they'll go marching to Bismarck. Two things stand out in the chorus from 1916 I just sang. First, the tune is familiar. It's Marching Through Georgia, a triumphal battle anthem from late in the Civil War. Political balladeers liked to use melodies from the Civil War because they were familiar, conducive to group singing. Second, the song is clearly aspirational in an optimistic way, because really, when did farmers all agree on anything? With the election of a nonpartisan league majority to the legislature, and Lynn Frazier as governor, though, farmers figured they had come into their own. I'm back on the subject of the balladeers of the NPL, our great farm movement of the early 20th century. One of them was LaRue Lanterman Shaw, author of Marching to Bismarck. Born in our year of statehood, 1889, to a prosperous country family in Morton County, Shaw attended the University of North Dakota, where he was a big man on campus, active in social and cultural matters. It's interesting historians have failed to note how important the state university was as a networking place for aspiring nonpartisan leaguers. Shaw went home to take up family farm interests and was a real community guy, a director of a cooperative store and of a rural credit union. In the meantime, though, he wrote this pugnacious ballad, Marching to Bismarck. Hurrah, hurrah, all farmers now awake. Hurrah, hurrah, we'll listen to no fake. This is our ultimatum, we're here to eradicate the bosses that used to go to Bismarck. Well, meanwhile, another one of our Norwegian balladeers, Ole Edestad of Balfour, born in Telemark, gave voice to the hatred of nonpartisan leaguers for the old party bosses in The Old Politicians. The nonpartisan leader reports, State Senator Ole Edestad livened up the League Legislative Caucus with a few verses in which he paid his respects to the politicians. He also seems resentful of the agricultural experts at the Ag College trying to tell the farmer how to farm. They have told how the land the moisture would keep if he plowed the same land about 8 inches deep, and when he should harvest, and when he should sow, if much larger crops he wanted to grow. Whereas Edestad and his colleagues declared that the pressing problems of the day were not agronomic, they were systemic. O farmer, so long as you mortgage your days and let someone else control what you raise, just that long you'll be in the middleman's care, and the hayseeds will never be combed from your hair. More about Senator Edestad, who was known for his droll wit, on another day, but meanwhile I'm looking for the backstory of another NPL balladeer, Adam D. Kaler of Velva. The press dubbed this bachelor farmer the poet laureate of the 1916 NPL convention, who filled every gap in proceedings with a lively and irreverent ballad. After that, he drops from my historian's sight until in 1922, having failed to show up for services at his Methodist church, he is found at home dead, the wording of the report implying death at his own hand. Evidently, he was not a happy balladeer after all.
Dr. Tom Ezern is a distinguished professor of history at North Dakota State University. That's it for this weekend edition of Main Street. Coming up Monday on the show, June 7th is Louise Erdrich's birthday, and we're going to mark the occasion by re-airing a conversation with her from last year when the book The Plague of Doves was the One Book, One Minnesota selection. That's coming up tomorrow on Main Street. Until then, enjoy the rest of your weekend.